Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
I'm Caleb Zachrin, the assistant editor of the New Books Network, and you're listening to New Books in Sociology. Today I'm speaking with Michael Johnston, assistant professor of William Penn University and host for New Books in Sociology, about his new book, Community Media Representations of Place and Identity at Tugfest. This book examines Tugfest, an annual interstate game of tug of war between two small towns along the Mississippi River. Michael, thank you for joining me today on the New Books Network.
Thank you for having me here today, Caleb.
Of course. You know, it's exciting to speak to another fellow host of the New Books Network. This is the first time that I've talked to someone who is an active host.
A little bit intimidating to be on the other side of the chair, you know, on the hot seat today. So
yeah, what's it like? Why don't you tell first, like, what is it like being a guest as opposed to the host?
Well, I have a feeling I'm going to do a whole lot more talking than listening, like I normally do.
Well, you know, why don't we then, you know, let's get right into it then. You know, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
All right. Well, as you said, I'm an assistant professor at William Penn University. I teach sociology and, you know, secondarily research and in the area of sociology, particularly looking at festivals and celebrations, identity and placemaking, as well as my next book project, which I'll get into later on, I'm sure, but on embodiment and mobilities research, particularly taking more of a microscopic approach, looking at action and place, and so why did I choose the Mississippi? Why did I choose Iowa and Illinois? Well, a large part of that is I have a large teaching load, so I spend most of my time in the classroom. But I wanted to stay in the field and continue to do research, and the Midwest seems to make the most sense, and the Mississippi. Is Old Man River. It has a long history, and it has a large history.
Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you came to write this specific book? You mentioned a little bit that you wanted to do some in-the-field research, and obviously you're based in the Midwest. So how did you choose this particular topic?
So my wife and I over a summer went to a bed and breakfast in LeClaire, Iowa. And when we stayed there, we went to one of the local museums. And when I went to this museum, I discovered this thing called Tugfest. This was 2017, 2018, when we went to this bed and breakfast. And then as I started to, you know, wrestle with the idea of writing this book, COVID-19 came around, and it didn't allow me to go to LeClaire, Iowa, and actually do field research because, you know, they canceled the Tug Fest that year. Plus, it's right around the school year starting up at William Penn. So the way that I approach this research is looking at media representations of Tug Festival. So looking at the local newspaper, as well as looking at YouTube videos to discover how Tugfest is made as a place, as well as how the people who participate in Tugfest, how their identity is constructed and reconstructed.
So you mentioned one of the towns so far. Can you tell us a little bit about LeClaire, Iowa and Port Byron, Illinois?
Yes, so LeClaire, Iowa is the place that I stayed at the bed and breakfast. However, right across the river from there is a town called Port Byron, Illinois. Both of these were port towns during the height of industrialization and travel along the Mississippi River, both north and south. So these towns have a long history with the Mississippi River. You know, and even during the wintertime, they were trade towns, people walking across the frozen tundra to make exchange of goods from LeClaire, Iowa to Port Byron and from Port Byron to LeClaire. These two communities are right across the river from each other. And the way that I see Tugfest is a way to reconstruct the identity of the river and these two places where they can still indulge in activity and interaction. And then also it helps revitalize their economy. I definitely think it is a way to bring people into the community who now might skip it because the interstate highway.
You begin your book with a one-liner, which is something, by the way, that I think more authors should really do. It's a really good hook. And I read it and I did laugh. And it goes, did you hear about the team? I think I wrote this down wrong, actually. Did you hear about the team that lost in tug of war? They couldn't pull it together. So I like this decision to start with that. It's definitely a strong hook. And, you know, my question is, how did Tugfest come into existence? For some of our listeners that aren't familiar with tug of war, I feel like tug of war is a fairly universal game. You know, what exactly is Tugfest? Could you just set the stage a little bit, the scene? What's it actually like?
So Tug Festival, it was adopted by the community when a local community member from Port Byron went down south on vacation and saw a tug of war occurring. I don't know whether or not it was a tug of war festival that took place on a river like this one does. However, he came back north and said, I definitely think we can do an event like this one. And there at that time became the Tug of War Festival. They started planning right away. It started out to be a very small event, one day only, between LeClaire, Iowa and Port Byron, Illinois. So what it is there's been a couple ongoing debates that I'll discuss in a bit, but what it is it's a rope that's connected between LeClaire, Iowa and Port Byron and strung across the Mississippi River. Initially, they would start from one side and take it all the way to the other side via boat. Today, however, one of the debates is whether or not one side has an advantage over the other side. So what they do is they meet in the center and pull it both ways so that the tension is equal. The tension is believed to be more equal across the rope on both sides. The other argument is whether the current of the river and the bend of the river gives Port Byron an advantage over the other side. It has since grown to a four-day event, and not only is there tug of war, but they've also had other activities like arm wrestling. They also have a carnival on the LeClaire, Iowa side. They also have a queen event on the Port Byron side. So it's an ever-growing event, but the focus of this book is on tug of war.
And for our listeners that haven't seen the Mississippi before, you know, what is this length? How long is the river? How far is this actual tug of war event? You know, each side. Yeah. What's the distance between the two of them?
So it's more than 1,000 foot from side to side. It's a mighty river. It's while it's not as mighty as it once was because of the lock and dam system that has been created, there is still a lot of water that is moving in the Mississippi River. And then also to give people an idea as to how many people are pulling on each side, it's 11 different teams with 20 people pulling on each side for each event. The women's event, which was only recently adopted, has 25 pullers on each side. So it's a it's a big event, and there are a lot of pullers, and it's a 3-hour event because that's as long as they can shut down the river for, which is a big task in itself, because while it's not as much of a working river, it's still a working river. And to shut it down to industrial traffic for 3 hours, that's progress that is lost.
You talk a little bit about some of the happenings at the event besides the tug of war. And, you know, this event, as we've mentioned before, takes place in the Midwest. Can you talk a little bit about Midwestern identity and how that comes through in this festival?
Yeah, so Midwest is, call it blue collar, call it farm boy atmosphere. In fact, the interesting thing is the journalist even refers to the men who are pulling as farm boys. And, another interesting thing about the Midwest is that the Midwest is known for, its beef, its steak. And unfortunately, what they refer to the women who are pulling as, they refer to them as beefy women. Now, it might come with the region, but I still think it's inappropriate.
And, in addition to that, as you mentioned, I'm wondering, you talk about a little bit about the introduction of a women's competition too, and this kind of framing of the beefy women and the farm boys. In the book, you talk about how the role that gender plays in the festival and kind of thinking about gender roles through this festival. So how do you think about this? How do you talk about that? And then also bringing in age too. So just kind of looking at the dynamics of gender and age.
So, I was thinking about even for a future project, looking at how carnivals have these replicas of larger rides at amusement parks and how they have the smaller ones to sort of prepare or socialize kids to the larger ride that they hope that they will one day ride as they get older and tall enough to jump onto that huge amusement ride. Well, what they have at this tug of war festival is a kiddie tug. They have kids of all ages pulling from side to side. It's all land-based. They're not crossing. The rope is not crossing the Mississippi River, but it's still a chance to get them exposed to what they hopefully one day will want to participate in, and that's the tug of war festival, the big pull that occurs on Saturday. And then when gender comes into play, there are a lot of supplementary events that take place at the Queen Festival. There's also There are also other activities like cheerleaders along the side. But I think where gender comes into play is that, it might lead some women and men to question whether or not they are built, literally built, for the Tug of War Festival. Because if they don't see themselves maybe as farm boys or as beefy women, they might not see themselves as being fully prepared for this activity and might find themselves going to some alternative activity or completely alienating themselves from the event altogether.
With any festival, obviously there are always outsiders, not just the citizens of the local area, but also people that travel around. Can you discuss the elements of tourism and attraction surrounding the festival? Who attends this festival? What's the atmosphere like, and what role does this play and maybe stimulating the local economies?
Yeah, so it's a national event. There's actually a national tug of war league where people are traveling all over the nation to participate in this thing called tug of war. In fact, some people come from these leagues to assist in training of the participants in this annual tug of war festival, particularly on the Port Byron side. And some on the Iowa side as well. And then also it is a global affair. People are coming to document this tug of war festival every year from other countries, ranging from Germany to there's people from France as well, but all over the globe to come in and witness this tug of war festival that there is nothing comparable to it anywhere else in the United States and abroad.
You mentioned a little bit with the sort of representation of gender in media, but how does the media, broadly speaking, represent Tugfest? And what do you think the implications are of this representation? And not only specifically for Tugfest, but just general other extrapolations about media representation of local cultures that you think you can draw from this?
So representation, I think that the representation collectively is a positive one. However, there have been some hiccups throughout the original throughout the years from the original inception of this event to today. One of the things that I mentioned from the media that I found was this reference to the Tug of War Festival becoming too large. The local sheriff said that he thinks that it's time to give it up, and he recommended that the festival either reduce the number of days that it's being held, or to just hang it up and quit doing it altogether. The response of the local organizers was to potentially, say that it's too big for the sheriff in town and to go to other people in order to provide security and to provide assistance with the event. There has also been some debate in the media as to whether or not this event is a party festival or a sport festival. The media in some ways sort of reported it as being this huge drinking fest where people are drinking all day long for 4 days back to back, and the local restaurants and bars are overflowing with people and with alcohol. And then on the other side, this idea of a sport festival where it actually is an activity that people come as fans to watch a specific activity before then departing to go back home having a specific activity in mind, whereas party seems to be a bit less organized.
Obviously, any academic project, there's a mix of looking at the archives, looking at primary sources and secondary sources. Can you talk about some of the documents that you looked at, either the primary documents first, and then maybe some secondary sources that helped you think about those primary sources?
So I would say that this is in some ways a historical sociology. Why? Because I didn't actually go out into the field and watch what was happening. A lot of my time was spent in the archives. So the archives take a couple different forms. One form is YouTube, using the search engine there to find as many sources as I possibly can of video footage taken of Tug Festival. The other source that I relied on heavily was the Quad City Times. In fact, if you look at the acknowledgments in the book, I give great thanks to the Quad City Times for their journalists doing such great reporting that allowed me to then bring all of the reports together to make sense of them and to identify major themes that occurred throughout all of this reporting over several years.
And are there any other sources, maybe not necessarily specific to Tugfest, but other texts on, like maybe, I don't know if local sociology would be like the proper term for this type of work, but maybe other works that helped inspire you and helped you think through some of the issues that you were looking at in terms of media representation?
So one of the... So with community media, I looked at Howley 2005, and it was his work is based on community media, but I also relied heavily on Gary Allen Fine's work on small group activities. He focuses on small groups, and that's definitely the festival has grown to be a very large event. I think it's, if we were to look at the percentage of people who come to this event as compared to the United States or even, generally Iowa, it's a very small percentage of the overall population that attends this, and an even smaller group of people who organize this event so that it can happen every year. So small group activities is something that I focused on from Gary Allen Fine.
What would you sort of call or think of as maybe, you know, major takeaways that you had from doing this research? Things that you know, prior to the work didn't necessarily think, and now, you know, something that has become kind of blindingly clear to you in the course of the research, maybe about, you know, the Midwestern identity, or about festivals, or about sociology?
Well, it's introduced me to looking at a variety of different festivals that occur. You know, it was this Great River Tug Festival that led me to my next project that I'm working on, which is a kayak and canoeing event where people cross the Flotzilla is what it's called, where people cross the Mississippi River for this communal activity ritual, where they have a picture taken every year in order to make an attempt at beating the largest flotilla record, and then from there docking and going to this larger party where there's drink and activity, but then there's also a concert, and seeing that there are other activities that are occurring along the Mississippi that I wasn't always aware of, but then also to see the importance of a festival and how many different festivals there are and the role that they play in everyday life, you know, both for the city and for the people who attend.
This is a question. You mentioned it a little bit in your in the afterword of the book, but just, you know, about the impact that COVID has had on the festival. And I'm wondering, you know, obviously people all the time, they're talking about, you know, the metaverse, everything going digital. We're not going to be in physical, you know, physical reality anymore. And obviously festivals are really about people coming together. So, you know, is this something that you feel that we need to somehow preserve these sorts of festivals, that we need these events where people can come together? Do you think does it worry you, this idea that maybe these festivals might not exist anymore and that everything will just be on the internet?
Well, this festival particularly came back after 1 year of a hiatus as a result of COVID-19. The event that I'm writing on now never stopped happening because the design of the event allowed for people to socially distance while on their canoe and kayaks. They didn't have their annual flotilla picture, but they were still able to come together for activity. Whether that's right, wrong, safe, or unsafe, we'll leave that up to viewers to decide, but it's no secret that it still went on. I think that people need to, you know, as a sociologist, the most basic thing that I can assume and understand about the human population is that we are social beings. And if we are social beings, it requires us to connect in some way, shape, or form. And I think the most natural way to connect is face-to-face. After all, that's what Goffman and others were studying. They weren't studying virtual connectedness. It didn't exist in the way that it does today.
And you mentioned a little bit about the project, the new project that you're working on now. Is there anything else that you're working on in addition to that, or any other problems, things you're reading, anything else that you know has been keeping or make, you know, find that you've been interested in?
Yeah. So community media representations is sort of where has sort of become my method by design, just on what my schedule looks like, and festivals and celebrations have sort of become the identity of for the backdrop of my research. I recently had somebody ask me, Michael, is your thing going to be festivals and celebrations? I said, well, it has been, and it might be the direction that I go. So, you know, as I explore different festivals around, the work that I'm doing right now is on a book about kayaking and a canoeing event, but the project after that for data collection, which I'm also in the midst of, is looking at airspace, getting away from the water for a bit and getting into the air and looking at a hot air balloon festival and looking at the role that these different designs on the balloon play and how that ties into the identity of the pilots of these hot air balloons. So I think that festivals are continuing to attract me. I don't know that I don't know when or if or how something else might deter me from using festivals as a backdrop for larger topics in sociology. But right now, festivals is where it's at.
I like to imagine that one day there'll be an academic festival of festivals where you can have a festival where you can talk about all the great festivals that are out there.
And be the keynote speaker of it, right?
Maybe in 20 or 30 years, once you've done every festival known to humankind, then you can do that.
Yes.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for being a guest in the New Books Network. I know, it's, Now that we've done it, how does it feel to be a guest compared to being a host?
Well, the chairs cooled down a bit. It was a hot seat. Now it's now it's perfect temperature. And thank you again for having me on this show. I hope that it's a joy for the listeners just as much as it has been for me as a guest on this show.
Yes, and I'm sure they will hear you again in the future. Doing exactly what I'm doing now and being the questioner. So thank you.
Thank you.